Heal Thyself, Using a Holistic Approach with Dr. Eric Madrid.
Welcome to today's podcast. Today I will be doing an interview with Brandon Waddington, author of The Wellness Bible, A No Bullshit Guide to Health and Wellness. Brandon is a health science degree, qualified naturopath, soft tissue therapist, yoga instructor, and personal trainer. He only concerns himself with evidence-based natural therapies. He has worked in some of Australia's most prestigious gyms and high-profile health clinics. He has also traveled abroad as an international fitness director and public speaker, and now works as a health and wellness advisor for one of the largest energy companies in the world. So stay tuned and listen to this interview.
Perfect. So yep. You guys are about 16 hours ahead, I guess?
I think that's correct, yeah.
14 hours ahead. And so we're here Tuesday evening at around 6 o'clock p.m. And we're actually having some rain, which is kind of unique for Southern California.
The weather here is absolutely amazing. I live on the beach, overlooking the Indian Ocean, and it's blue skies and even a darker blue ocean, and yeah, it's pretty nice out there.
Excellent. Now, this might be a dumb question. Does it ever snow anywhere in Australia?
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but I think southeast of Australia gets some snow in the middle of winter. When I'm flying over from, say, Sydney to Melbourne in winter, I can see down on the tops of the mountains there's a bit of white stuff, which I guess is snow. I've never seen it up close.
Right. Okay. So I came across your Instagram profile a few months back, and I obviously your title, and I saw that you'd written a book, and I have to admit your title caught my attention, or the title of your book. So a genius job in your title, the Wellness Bible, the No Bullshit Guide to Health and Wellness.
Thank you.
Yeah. And so I picked it up on Amazon, and I read it on a weekend. So it's a very good read, very thorough, good information. And I like your, practical approach to health and overall wellness that I think many times, especially in my, allopathic medicine field, we tend to complicate things when in reality, the answer is a lot easier than we make it out to be.
Definitely. Sometimes, but not always, I think, when it comes to allopathic medicine.
Yeah,
that's a lot like naturopaths. Doctors are the same. I think some are better than others.
Right. So can you tell me your story and how you got involved in healthcare and how you got, and tell us about what you do and about services that you provide and the patients that you care for.
Well, originally, I was fighting in the ring, and I had an injury, and it kind of put me out of the sport for a while. So I ended up studying to become a personal trainer. And I seemed to just add more qualifications to that as I went down the line. I ended up leaving Australia for a while to work on luxury cruise ships in the Caribbean. And as personal trainers, we were required to sell some herbal products based on the concept of detoxification.
Sure.
And I did a lot of study while some people were out partying and stuff, because there's a lot of drinking goes down on a cruise ship, life for staff. But a lot of that time I spent in my cabin just reading books written by naturopathic doctors and dietitians and people with that sort of field. And I thought, oh, it's pretty good. And I thought, when I finish my contract out at sea, I'll study to become a naturopath. I thought it might be a couple of months and a few thousand dollars, but it ended up being so much more than that. I thought, it just a bit of herbs and nutrition, how hard could it be? But it was, as you know, with the health sciences, everything, anatomy, physiology, microbiology, pharmacology, and the list goes on.
Right.
Yes. So basically, I knuckled down and studied and become a naturopath. At the same time, I started to become a clinical massage therapist at the time. And then I just kept adding to that. Also a yoga instructor now and a few other things. And I guess I can call myself an author now too.
Right. Excellent. Yeah. And so how long were you, to go back to the Caribbean, to the cruise, because I went on a cruise last, about a year ago, and we had an amazing time and definitely met people from all over the world. We were in the Caribbean.
Yep.
So how long did you do that?
I just did one contract, which worked out about 10 months.
Okay.
Yeah, and it was definitely an eye-opener. Until I got to the Caribbean, I'd never even seen a cruise ship in my life, and just amazing how big they can get.
Right.
And, yeah, I was on Freedom of the Seas, which was like Freedom of the Seas was the biggest ship in the world at the time.
Okay.
But they've made some that are even bigger since then.
Right. And so obviously you kind of some of the islands in the Caribbean obviously are U.S. Virgin Islands and I'm not sure how much experience you got with the U.S. healthcare system. Obviously, there's a big difference. I was doing a little bit of research and it seems like you guys do a better job there in Australia when it comes to healthcare. It looks like in Australia, pretty much everybody's covered in healthcare. Is that right? When it comes to the ability to see a physician or go to the hospital, there's a universal healthcare.
Yeah, we have a certain amount of healthcare, which is better than some countries, but there's always room for improvement because I think Norway and a few other places are excellent. Canada is a really good one, but with when it comes to like personal observations, when I was on the cruise ships, for example, you could kind of, generally speaking, pick up who the Americans were. They seem to be so much more visibly unhealthy than the rest.
Right.
Then again, Australians, generally speaking, aren't much better overall. As the saying goes, Australia is just America for beginners. I think we run a close second to obesity and stuff to America. We're all similar in that respect.
Right. Well, I think it's unfortunate. One of the things that the United States is exporting is our illness in the form of McDonald's and Burger King and Starbucks, where we're getting these young kids hooked on Frappuccinos and 100 grams of sugar before they even start, you know, their school that day. And before they even start studying, they're already, you know, their pancreas is already secreting tons of insulin, just trying to manage the glucose load.
Yeah. So the sickness franchise, eh?
Exactly. The and explain to me now, you in your book, you call yourself a skeptical naturopath. Explain to me why that is.
Yeah, well, I like there to be at least a certain amount of evidence behind some things. So I kind of upset people on both sides, on the Western allopathic front, but also on the natural therapy side. I'd like to sit back and have a bit more of an objective view and let's find out where the truth of the matters really lie. So, for example, there's many naturopaths still believe in or promote things like homeopathy.
Right.
And I mean, some listeners might not even know the difference between naturopathy and homeopathy, but there's like very limited, if any, evidence for homeopathy, for example. But a lot of the full-time skeptics will say the same thing about nutrition and herbs, whereas, you know, there's multiple randomized controlled trials for herbs and even more for nutrition and even bigger supporting studies such as your meta-analyses and systematic reviews. If you don't even have to look that hard to find it, you just go to PubMed or look in most of the science journals.
Correct. Yeah, that's one of the things that I noticed too, is that there's a lot of, there's a lot of things I like about naturopathic approach, because the first approach should always be diet. The first approach should always be exercise and trying to help the patient restore balance. And, you know, our bodies are constantly trying to seek out homeostasis and trying to get back to a balanced state. And I think our bodies will do a lot of the work, but yet we just have to enable our bodies to do that. And I think that's something, I think that naturopathy takes a big, strong stance on, and they're really trying to help people heal themselves or allow people's bodies to heal themselves.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Well, the first steps in any treatment protocol, I think, should be to firstly stop doing whatever it is that's making you sick, if there's something like that can be identified, and then work on the steps to improve wellness, to improve vitality. And it's always back to basics. First and foremost, there's the fundamental building blocks of health and wellness, such as, like you said, the diet or nutrition, and then exercise and a few other basics. One that I think that people could focus on more is just getting enough water, simple things like that. And probably the biggest thing is getting enough sleep, get enough good quality sleep. That's just, without that, everything else falls apart.
Right. No, absolutely. Now, one, the part one of your book, it's called Mind and Body Connection. And And it would appear to me that most allopathic physicians completely missed the boat or missed the cruise ship, perhaps. But we completely miss that in allopathic medicine. And it seems we're entirely, as a profession, at least here in the United States, our goal is, as we claim it to be completely science-based, but yet we forget or we act as if the mind-body connection is not science-based. Why do you think most allopathic physicians completely miss that mind-body connection?
I think that, the evidence to support the mind-body connection is only fairly recent. So in my opinion, I think it's just the attitudes being passed down from before the evidence was there. Now there's like abundant evidence to support the mind-body connection. I think over 2,000 papers looking into that at my last look. But now many, many doctors and even the most skeptical of people are jumping on board. And you can, even as a observation, like if within yourself, if something's not right upstairs in your head, that passes on to the body. You know, cortisol levels rise in the blood, and we gain body fat and lose muscle, just to name a few things. Then sleeping's affected, and then it's a cascade, a flow-on effect. Just everything gets worse.
Right. It seems like allopathic medicine is, you know, and again, I trained obviously in allopathic medicine. I went to Ohio State University School of Medicine, and I saw early on where we really were kind of misled in the sense that patients would come in with symptoms and we were very quick to, you know, make the diagnosis. We'd pat ourselves on the back and then simply look to a pharmaceutical to try to fix that. Or if someone was depressed, for example, we would, you know, be quick to give them a pharmaceutical medication, which some of the studies make it look like this is kind of more of a placebo effect in many cases, a lot of these medicines. And in reality, we spent little time questioning the patient about their family history, what's going on at home, what's going on with relationships, what's going on with their diet, what's going on with their physical activity level. Because in reality, all these things play a big role in one's mental and physical health. It's not just an absence of a pharmaceutical drug.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. That I ask people, like, are you really depressed or are you just surrounded by assholes? And, you know, it could be that or nutritional deficiency is huge. And once again, not enough sleep possibly, and so many possible factors. And then when we are looking at, interventions, pharmaceuticals may have their place, but there's not enough credit goes into certain natural therapies. There's not a lot, but the ones that do exist have a quite a good amount of evidence to support them.
Right. What natural, if someone came to you with, let's say, depression or anxiety, how would you approach that? What would be some of the recommendations you would make in a not only herbal but also lifestyle?
Yeah, well, firstly, with the lifestyle, I'd, if possible, try and identify the cause. And if it is an environmental factor, let's try and treat that first and then make sure the other basics are taken care of, the correct nutrition and getting enough sleep and the mindset. Usually the you can have a pathological thought process. So for anxiety, they might be worrying about the future too much or just worrying in general, choosing the wrong thoughts, or in depression, a bit the other way, dwelling on the past. And then after we've addressed that, then look at herbal interventions, for example. So some of them have quite a lot of evidence, such as St. John's wort, which is not bad, but it does interact with many things, with other serotonin self-reuptake inhibitors, for example. It can cause serotonin syndrome, which can be actually fatal. But then there's other herbs, such as saffron, which has now got a more growing body of evidence. And there's quite a few other herbs, and you've got other nutritional medicines, like Beyond Food is Medicine. I'm talking things like S-aldenosyl methanoin, or SAMI for short, which they found out, as you might know about this, one day we were looking at it for arthritis because it treats the joint pain so well and inflammation, but they found in the studies by accident that the patients that happened to have depression were starting to improve on that note. So,
right.
Yeah, that's one of my favourites, these amphoterical, bi-directional medications or natural therapies where they can treat two different or unrelated things at the same time.
Sure.
SAMI is a good example of that.
Right. And then there was a couple of quotes in your book that I really kind of spoke to me. One of them was you mentioned that being alive should feel good. If it doesn't, something is wrong. You can and should enjoy clear skin, strong hair, nails, and high energy levels. And to me, it seems a lot of people go through life, again, feeling depressed, feeling sad, and they think this is just the way life is.
Yeah, they get used to it and think that's normal, but sometimes they don't realize the potential that they have for health and wellness until they manage to get a glimpse of this like good health that I'm writing about, that I'm speaking of. It's like a bit of a moment of clarity sometimes, if you can just move them out of that funk. Yeah, and I've even if you have excellent health and wellness for such a long time, to the point where you always do have high energy, you can always drop backwards sometimes, whether it be from a poor health work environment or situations in your life, but then it's never too late to bounce back. I've had situations before when I used to fight in the ring, I used to get high off the food. Like when you're training so well and your body's craving this nutrition, then you give your body what it's asking for, not just the macronutrients, but even the micronutrients, vitamins, minerals, enzymes, phytochemicals. And you can really feel like every cell in your body just peak with energy, and it's a good way to be, especially when your thoughts are on track, you're clear-headed, everything seems to fall into place, and then that flows onto other aspects of your life, whether it be relationships and career. You just get so motivated.
Right. Sure. One of the things that I noticed too is that that a lot, and again, I'm going to quote another quote from your book as well that again really spoke to me, is you said, to be truly well, you need to take responsibility for your health. And I think in my profession here, and I don't know, maybe I'm selecting in a sense for certain patients, but it seems like a lot of patients, they want to live a life of abusing themselves. They want to eat a lot of sugars. They don't want to exercise. They want to drink alcohol in excess, and they want to smoke, and they want to do all these things, but yet they want to live a long, healthy life, and they think that I'm going to be able to give them a prescription medication that's going to kind of wipe away all of their transgressions, of their lifestyle transgressions.
Definitely. Everyone wants the magic bullet. Right. I believe we're definitely, for the most part, we're healthy by choice, not just by chance. I'm sure genetics plays a role, but we can activate those genetics or inhibit them depending on the choices that we make. So this comes down to a lot of choices for the most part.
Right. It seems like there's definitely a paradigm shift in that sense with, maybe people 50 and under even, where they're starting to realize, because even when I was younger, I'm 46, but it was once held that our destiny was our genes. And if you had a cancer gene or an Alzheimer's gene, that basically it was a time bomb waiting to go off, and there was nothing that one could do about it. But now we know about epigenetics, and we know that we can actually turn genes off and on based on lifestyle, exercise, stress reduction. Do you want to touch upon that a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. We're not a slave to the genetics, but like I said, with the choices, we can just about choose to express those genes if we make the wrong choices. So I think we have genetic strengths and weaknesses. So, for example, there might be one family line that has a long history of, say, cardiovascular illness. So for that, for those sort of people who want to take responsibility for their health, I'd recommend doing things, focus more on heart-healthy activities such as your cardiovascular exercise or exercise in general, avoiding things, too many stimulants, whether they're legal or otherwise, and, choosing not to stress. That which is, it is a bit of a choice, and where you might have other genetic weaknesses in a different family line, say such as cancer, and once again I'd be avoiding the things that choose cancer, so that I'm more likely to activate those cancer genes and promote health, the right foods, getting enough antioxidants and things like that.
Right. So when clients come to you, what how do you work with them? What are they usually asking for? What kind of assistance are they usually seeking when they contact you for a visit?
Depends at what. Well, lately, because I've been working in mining, so as a wellness advisor, so a lot of it comes down to musculoskeletal problems because of poor posture and in the machines, people are sitting down in heavy equipment for 12, 13 hours a day, and with that comes a lot of obesity. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people are wanting that magic bullet. What's the quick fix they can do? Is there something they can take and just to fix it all? And the answer is generally no, not on either Western medicine or natural medicine.
Right.
So you're just going to try and make those choices the best you can, even if you are limited by lifestyle. Little small changes make a big difference. And sure. A lot of it's down to motivation. Whereas a few years ago, before I was in mining, it'd be more things say, something that comes to mind would be a lot of female reproductive health, things like your dysmenorrhea, period pains, for example, and we'd be looking at certain herbs, which I find quite effective. And a lot of girls might go to a general practitioner, like a typical general practitioner, and they'll just put them on the oral contraceptive pill if they're not already, or try and make them postpone their periods. And I think that's a bit of a horrific advice, really, to make a girl skip periods and things like that. I think our bodies are in perfect harmony most of the time. With we have we're a walking pharmacy with hormones and all in delicate balance. And just to give hormone therapy like that willy-nilly and just throw everything out of whack can lead to some serious consequences in the short term and the long term.
Right. Yeah. In reality, we should be trying to restore balance to our own system and let our own hormones kind of do what they're supposed to do when we're feeding ourselves correctly. Right.
Definitely. Homeostasis is imperative. And basically, we want to give our bodies the best chance it has. So create a good ground, like basically nice soil, for example, for good health to grow.
Right.
Sure. Create the right environment. Things should take care of itself in most cases.
Yeah. Now, is there a specific diet that you recommend to clients?
I have specific diets for specific illnesses, but if someone comes to me without a specific disease or something, they just want to improve things, I'd go back to basics and say, all right, well, let's make sure you're getting enough plant food. More plant food, the better. Mm-hmm. You really want your plate to look like a bit of a garden, lots of colours and stuff like that. I don't push a vegan agenda or anything like that, but if some people want help with that, because you know vegans are going to need to find nutrients where they wouldn't usually get them from, like in the case of proteins and meat or vitamin B12.
Sure.
But overall, for a general person, I'd just say, yeah, lots of fruit and vegetables and omega-3 essential fatty acids. I think they're not enough. People are getting too many omega-6 and not many omega-3s, so... Yeah, your oily fish, for example, is an excellent source of that. Otherwise, for a plant version, we'll be looking at things like your avocados.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What is your take on the low carb diets, or you know, whether it's a paleo diet or a ketogenic diet? What is your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, most nutritional advice these days is directed at weight loss. That's probably the number one presenting complaint with patients when it comes to nutrition. And I do get questions about low carb or high fat and things like that. Well, first and foremost, for weight loss, you need that calorie deficit. You can do that in a healthy way by, I'd say, reducing your processed, refined carbohydrates and increasing proteins and fats. Or you can also do it in an unhealthy way. Even if that calorie deficit is there, people could actually lose weight while eating McDonald's, for example. I definitely would not recommend that, but it can be done if that calorie deficit is there. So I'd always naturally inclined to go the natural or healthy option. Sure. Now, with low carb, they've done low carb versus high carb studies where the calorie count is the same, and they can both lose weight. But I find the low carb version is probably more sustainable. And, if you reduce carbs to a more serious degree, obviously you can go into ketosis, which can help speed things along further. I don't think a ketosis diet would be, in my opinion, sustainable. I think you'd be more the expert in that field than myself. But look at what the fitness competitors are on stage, bodybuilders and that. They use ketosis as a weight loss tool all the time, and it's time and time again, it's proven to be highly effective and it works extremely right. Well. I'd definitely be in favor for more the low carb sort of thing over the higher carb.
Right. But yeah, I think a lot of things in life, though, too, you have to balance that out as well, because, mm-hmm. Yeah, as you mentioned, I've been doing a more of a low carb ketogenic diet, and I've lost quite a bit of weight. But I'll be honest, I am missing a lot of apples and oranges and bananas and grapes and things that I would like to eat that have a lot of antioxidants that I've been avoiding for the time being because I've been just trying to get to a specific goal. And, you know, but my plan, though, is to incorporate those back into my diet.
That sounds perfect.
Yeah. Once I reset my thermostat, so to speak, or my thermostat, and my goal is to kind of incorporate that back into my diet, and then maybe use more of a low carb or a ketone diet going forward, just to help to if I kind of go up a little bit, or if I need to get my weight back down a few pounds, just to kind of put me back in balance.
Yeah, that's actually pretty much what I'm doing myself. I think it's probably the most effective. So sort of like what I think you're saying is an intermittent ketosis. So just use the ketosis diet to get you in the shape you want, and then you can slowly incorporate back other healthy foods like your fruit and that, for example, because I think the ketosis diet, as effective as it is while you're on it, you can eliminate some foods that are not necessarily unhealthy. And that's great because you can incorporate them back in later. I've gained a bit of body fat myself. I've just had my second knee reconstruction and a couple of bulge discs in my neck, one of them pushing against my spinal cord. I've put my body through a bit of a rough ride physically, but it's on the way back. And I think now that I can start to train again, it's time to get my nutrition on track. And I think ketosis is definitely the way I'll be going.
Yeah. Now you were a kickboxer and a pugilist, a regular boxer as well, or what was your?
Yeah, I fought in the ring for them both. I didn't take it that far, probably due to more injuries. Right. Now more boxing these days is more just for the love of it. I just love boxing training. I find it probably the only cardiovascular exercise that I enjoy.
Right.
And it's fun, especially if you're also including sparring. It just adds a whole nother dimension to exercise when someone's trying to knock you out.
Right.
So, yeah, that's probably my passion right there, apart from yoga.
Sure. Now, and how often do you do yoga, by the way? Because I know my sister actually has a yoga studio in Los Angeles, and I'll be honest, I've not done it, but I know it's something that I need to consider just for overall stress reduction, flexibility, and so on. So how often do you do it, and do you teach classes, or?
Well, lately I've been doing not at all. I'm lucky to be walking actually after that last knee recon,
right.
But I'm looking forward to getting back into it again.
Yeah.
It's actually quite a few studies on yoga supporting that for not just physical but also mental health.
Right.
And to answer your other question, I have been teaching it up on mining sites, in mining camps up north, and I'm probably about to start doing that again soon.
Right.
Yeah, I actually didn't really like yoga when I first started, say 20 years ago. But I knew how good it was for you. I knew something was excellent about it, so I just kind of persisted until I finally enjoyed it. Now I absolutely love it.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's not an easy thing to do. I mean, I guess you can do yoga however you like. You can make it easy. You can do a relaxing version, or you can really push yourself quite hard. And it's physically quite demanding depending on how you do it. I mean, look at Sean Phelps and Dylan Werner. Dylan Werner is an excellent example. These guys, just one look at them, you can see they look like bodybuilders. They have excellent muscle definition and size. And then you have the mental aspect of yoga. It's a form of meditation, depending on how you choose to do it. And with that comes all the other benefits, say reduced blood pressure if you have hypertension, reduced stress levels, which the benefits of that is countless.
Right. Is yoga pretty well accepted in Australia? And are there quite a bit of yoga studios, or how does that work? Are there?
Yeah, there's more yoga studios than you can poke a stick at. They're everywhere now. It's growing rapidly. There's so many different styles. You can do your Bikram yoga in the heat, or anything. There's a yoga for everyone, I believe.
Right. Sure.
Yeah.
Now I'm part two of your book as well. Let me ask you this. This is actually in part one. You commented about, you said sometimes the food you want, so sometimes the food we want is actually what the bacteria need. And there's a lot of stuff going on regarding the gut microbiome. Do you want to touch upon that a little bit and what you meant by that?
Yeah, well, we're absolutely covered in bacteria, 90% of which is located in our gut or in our intestines. And yeah, it's when you say it's not what we personally want, it's what the bacteria crave. It's like we are host to these little parasites, but we work together, feeding each other. And if our body's deficient in something, our gut bacteria might tell us. It's like we actually get possessed by this collective bacteria population. It's quite amazing.
I've always felt that way too, where it seems sometimes like when we have a craving for something, it's almost like we're battling within our own mind. Like our intellectual self will say, no, I don't want that bowl of ice cream. But then on the other hand, we feel like you said, possessed. We feel like there's an inner voice saying, eat that ice cream. It's necessary. It's important. And a lot of times those cravings tend to give in and we end up eating that ice cream or that chocolate or whatever it is. Do you think maybe those are gut bacteria actually maybe triggering or sending chemical messages to our brain?
Yeah, sometimes definitely, depending on the cause. And if it's just, if it does come down to the microflora population, say different microorganisms require or crave different things. So it's got like Candida albicans, for example, when we have dysbiosis, say an overgrown population of Candida and not enough of the healthier bacteria, they might be craving these sweet foods. And then the more we feed them, the more they grow, and the more out of balance our microflora population gets. And then we have, in regards to saying the mental aspect, well, there's many studies now showing that they affect the way we think, from everything from like our moods to our cravings. So probiotics, or just, our microflora in general, are more than just a gastrointestinal issue, more than just digestive functions. They're so much more, everything from cardiovascular health to mental health to much more.
So in a sense, when we're eating food, we're not necessarily just feeding our body, we're actually feeding our gut.
Absolutely. Yeah. And our gut in turn feeds us. So some of the bacteria in our large intestines produce vitamin K and things like that. So we need them and they need us.
Right. Interesting. So, and I think that's definitely a field that we're starting to get more and more more data on, and I know I've seen it within my own practice and among some of my colleagues. More of them are, when we prescribe antibiotics, whether it's for pneumonia or sinus infections or urinary tract infections, I see more physicians here in the United States recommending probiotics at the same time, realizing that we are, you know, when we're treating these infections, we're also killing a lot of healthy bacteria and causing a lot of other infections like C. diff and so on.
Absolutely. I love the way the direction of this health prescription is going. It's the same. It reflects in Australia too. A lot of doctors are starting to recommend probiotics, a probiotic course after antibiotics. And not just that, sometimes certain vitamins and minerals, which is a long way from, say, 20, 30 years ago.
Right. Yeah.
It's starting to acknowledge the role that natural medicine plays.
Absolutely. Now you talk about also six principles of naturopathy in your book, and I'll kind of discuss those. But number one was like, do no harm. So that, I think, something that's common in naturopathic and allopathic medicine. But I think naturopaths probably do a better job carrying that out.
Yeah, definitely. Do no harm. So what can I say about that? It's like, I think more applies in, say, allopathic medicine with certain doctors, maybe. Sometimes the medicine that they'll prescribe has the side effects. I mean, some people won't even call them side effects. They are the effects.
Right.
I think if there's an alternative to use, which it's not always, but sometimes there is an alternative, that's not going to harm the patient in other ways.
Yeah, so I think that's definitely a better approach to go, and then only, you know, last resort, you know, kind of, you know, bring out the heavy gun and try to, you know, use maybe a pharmaceutical. But if we can help heal the patient without putting something in their body that's foreign and has a lot of side effects, it's definitely. And then the second principle was the healing power of nature. So again, naturopathy utilizes the healing power of nature, where it seems like allopathic medicine, we're fighting the body, we're always trying to do opposite and trying to kill things. And I don't know, it's like we're at war, it seems like, in allopathic medicine.
In a lot of cases, yes, probably less these days. I think Western and natural medicine are referring to each other more and accepting each other more, but there's still some people on both sides that are digging in their heels further. Western allopathic medicine absolutely has its place, and antibiotics have their place, and not enough credit goes to that, I think, from one side. But on the other, definitely natural medicine also has its place, mostly in preventing the need for Western medicine in the first place, if possible.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's the important. I think that's the important thing, because for a lot of times when patients come to us and as a profession, and they ask how to prevent, you know, X, Y, and Z, our response is, you know, how do I prevent breast cancer? And most doctors will say get a mammogram, but that doesn't prevent breast cancer. That just finds it early on.
Although some will actually say, oh, we've detected that breast cancer gene in your family. So some doctors will recommend a double mastectomy.
Right.
And I think that's quite brutal. I think Angelina Jolie did that, but I think I don't personally agree with that. I think there's so many other things we can do. And yeah, it's pretty brutal, especially when some mothers are getting their daughters, like, they're meaning well, and it's based on fear, though, they're getting their young daughters double mastectomies before their daughter really gets a chance to explore other options.
Right, absolutely. Where really the guidance should be optimizing body mass index, minimizing environmental toxins, exercising, eating organic fruits and vegetables when appropriate, and so on. There's a lot of lifestyle habits that could, like we talked about earlier, that could be done to help prevent those cancer genes from ever turning on.
Exactly.
And that was another, so the third principle was treat the cause. So again, I think with naturopathic medicine, the goal is to treat the cause of the problem, not simply the symptom. Treat the whole person as well. Again, in my field, I'm a family doctor, so I think we do more holistic care, but you know, we send people to specialists all the time, and mm-hmm. they're only treating one system, completely neglecting the other systems that are intertwined.
Yeah, definitely. The body's interconnected, and one thing can affect the other. But one example comes to the mind, which I brought up earlier, was, say, if someone were to have, say, arthritis and depression at the same time, you could treat it with one particular thing, say that S-aldenosyl methionine. But then you have other examples, say, digestive issues, which could lead to other problems, say mental health issues. So you can not just prescribe one thing, focusing on that one body part. Look at the body as a whole from a holistic approach.
Right. Yeah, I've had patients. One patient comes to mind. He had eczema over about 90% of his body, and he was about 45 years old, and he'd had it since he was a teenager. And he had been to about 6 dermatologists over, 30 years of his life. And they would give him steroids and give him creams, and it would work for a brief while. But of course, it would always come back. So
yeah, and meanwhile, the those corticosteroids that would be prescribed for the eczema over long term, that would be thinning the skin and making it weaker and more prone to other things. And
absolutely.
Breaking. It's actually that the integumentary system, skin is such a good example of multiple things, like one part of the body affecting the other. Like you can see, stress, for example, will exacerbate certain skin conditions, whether it's acne or eczema or psoriasis. And then, which brings me to a study that I read a while back with psoriasis patients. So for listeners who don't know, psoriasis is an autoimmune inflammatory disease that manifests usually on certain parts of the body, on their extensor surfaces. Anyway, these psoriasis patients, they divided them into two groups with light therapy, UV light therapy. That's just one, what I consider to be a natural medicine recommended for by Western allopathic doctors. But if you were to treat it purely Western allopathic style, it's pretty brutal medicine. So you've got like chemotherapy, basically, to lower the immune system, amongst other things, so which brings about dramas of its own. Then you're not really looking holistically at it. You know, when we said do no harm was the first principle of medicine.
Right.
Anyway, these patients were divided into both groups. So both patients had this light therapy. They're standing in standing sunbeds, basically. And they, about one of those groups had the control group just did that. The other group did that plus meditated. And what they found was the meditation group had better results, statistically significantly better results than the control group, which only had the light therapy on its own. And then they replicated that study and made it bigger with more people, and it had the same results.
Interesting. So basically the stress level, so they reduced their stress level, and that probably helped heal the gut and got the gut healthier.
Mm.
And then their skin ended up improving.
I think it would have done more than that as well, like would have reduced inflammation on some level, some mechanism that's yet to be identified, probably through cortisol in the blood levels, I'm guessing, but who knows? Yeah, it's pretty amazing, the power of the mind and the power of the brain.
Sure. No, absolutely. I think, too, one of the things that we tend to, you know, it's really difficult in my profession because a lot of times we have 15-minute appointments and patients will come in with multiple problems, and it's, you know, by the end of that 15 minutes, you're trying to solve 3, 4, 5 problems. I mean, if you do the math, that doesn't give you much, you know, that gives you just under a couple minutes per problem. And we really do them, I think, a disservice in that sense. So I think having people like you, you know, where patients can, you know, consult with or train with or, you know, even spend more time, hopefully, to, you know, to help them fix their health overall, and like you said, prevent disease from ever beginning is super important.
Yeah, definitely. I think something I've noticed is with a typical GP appointment, you could wait for an hour and then go in for, say, 10 minutes, whereas with a naturopath, you could wait for 10 minutes and go in for an hour. And you have that time to go over to not just educate but also motivate and inspire. That's why I've had doctors come to me in my clinic and ask me for nutritional advice, and I said, "Oh, like, shouldn't you know this?" And it turns out they typical doctor, and from the research I did with I think that might have been the Journal of American Medical Association, 19.6 hours is their typical training over a doctor's training lifespan.
Right.
You might be able to tell me differently on that one, but whereas say a naturopath or a nutritionist usually has, you know, up to 4 years of training, and a dietitian more again.
Right. No, absolutely. That was exactly my experience, despite going to one of the top tier medical schools in the United States. You know, by the end of my nutrition class, I knew that the average person needed 60 milligrams of vitamin C to not get scurvy.
Yeah.
And about 100 units of vitamin D to not get rickets. And that was about the extent of it.
Yeah.
I've learned more about nutrition simply watching Netflix documentaries than I did in 4 years of medical school.
Yeah.
And it's sad because, you know, the fact that I think most doctors would admit that 90% of the chronic diseases out there are caused by nutritional deficiencies or poor nutrition. But yet we know almost nothing about the leading cause of high blood pressure, diabetes, cancers, you know, all these ailments.
Yeah, and some people are quite staunch in their thoughts where they think, oh, that's right, well, doctors should be made to learn more. Well, I think not necessarily. I think maybe keep it as it is, or maybe a bit more nutrition, but let doctors have their place, and we can refer to them for the things they need, especially for emergency health care, but other things that require powerful drugs. And then the doctors can prescribe back to us, to the nutritionists and naturopaths, things more like for nutritional information and where we have had that training. We've had, or in Australia anyway, we have less training in the pharmacological side and more in the nutrition side.
Yeah, I think you're right. There definitely has to be a lot more working together. I mean, you mentioned you had knee surgery, and obviously you want somebody who enjoys doing surgery and cutting on people, because that's what that person is good at. You wouldn't necessarily, now you might see a nutritionist, or obviously you are one, but if you weren't, a person like you would see a nutritionist to help facilitate recovery and to help, you know, recover in a speedy way. But you definitely want, you know, or if you get an accident and you're bleeding inside your brain, you don't want to call an herbalist, you want the brain surgeon.
yeah, I don't want someone to come up with some crystal healing or something. But The medications, the drugs that doctors can prescribe post-surgery for, say, pain relief, which is highly necessary after a full knee reconstruction.
Right.
There's some pretty good, very effective drugs out there for that sort of thing. And then what I'd be prescribing myself is stuff to help me. I'm basically stuff to help me heal the best way possible. So there's some nutrients out there that is basically joint food. Mm. And so it's certain herbs are like organ-specific foods.
Right.
But so now I'm on some gelatin and borax and certain vitamins and nutrients that's going to give my knee the best chance it is at healing.
Sure. What would you take for pain? What kind of natural things are you taking for pain?
Well, I'm not really taking anything for pain now. And I think Western pharmaceuticals have much better pain relief things like specific analgesics that natural medicine just couldn't compare. Although for long-term inflammation, then I'd be looking at natural sort of therapies, certain herbs, say devil's claw, and a few other things. Devil's claw is one of my favorites. Boswellia, or also known as Indian frankincense, mm-hmm. that has some good evidence too for its anti-inflammatory properties. And then you have the nutritional side, like omega-3s and reducing omega-6. Right. Whereas, but for acute inflammation, then I'd probably look at certain Western pharmaceutical anti-inflammatories.
Right, ibuprofen or naproxen for that.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Okay. Now, and then just kind of, you know, can you talk a little bit about your book here and who was your target, who was it written for, and what inspired you to write this?
I find that a lot of people were either strictly for or against natural medicine or strictly for or against Western allopathic medicine. I wanted to have a bit more of an objective approach or an objective perspective on it and find the truth based on the evidence available. And so I supported quite a few natural therapies, but also ran down a few, noticed that some was lacking evidence. And same with Western medicine. There's so much supporting evidence for Western medicine, but also there's also lacking in some areas, which I mentioned in the book. Because, I mean, everything that was once approved as deemed safe and effective by the FDA or the TGA in Australia was everything that's been taken off the market due to safety concerns was once approved.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like, say, thalidomide was an example.
Right.
But, yeah, but with the book, it's what can I say? It's got 163 references to peer-reviewed science journals. You know, everything from the British Medical Journal to the Journal of the American Medical Association to the Lancet, and so many more. Target audience is basically anyone who has an interest in health and wellness, and but wants to know what really works and what doesn't. And I find that most people who buy a book usually come back and buy two or three more, so
right,
they can
right.
buy them as presents for their friends. That I'm getting a lot of feedback that they actually enjoy reading it. It's not just a chore. It's quite a light reading.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a good read, and it went very smoothly as well. And like I mentioned, I like how you kind of discussed each different health system. You know, the heart, the lungs, the neurologic system. So there was kind of, if someone was specifically having lung issues or neurologic issues, they could focus in even more on that specific section for themselves.
Yeah, so the first section was the basics, which I refer to always back to basics, which was weight loss, nutrition, exercise, and mindfulness. And then that second section is pretty much the body systems, like you said, the cardiovascular system, the respiratory system, musculoskeletal, integumentary. Then it also, towards the end there, finished off with men's health, women's health, mental health. And then the final chapter, which kind of acted as a bit of a conclusion, was anti-aging and longevity. And it's all written in a bit of an Aussie slang style, but so you can still understand it, even though it was all evidence-based.
Right.
And that final chapter was one of my favourites. I find longevity, or the gerontology, the study of ageing, to be fascinating. Looking at the blue zones in the world, the countries in the world where they live longer than every other, not just the countries, sorry, the populations in certain countries of the world where they live longer than every other place in the world. So the average age of death would be over 100, or super centenarians, which is the average age of death was over 110.
Mm.
So Okinawa in Japan, for example, they got the longest, oldest people on earth there. And I look at what these different blue zones have in common, especially in terms of nutrition and mindset and things like that.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I learned a new word, I must admit. I did not know what a bloke was.
Yeah, so bloke being Aussie slang for men and Sheila being Aussie slang for females.
Okay. Is it just any man in general is considered a bloke, or is it a studly guy such as yourself who could take a couple of hits to the head from boxing?
Yeah, well, yeah, you got that bloke over there. He's a good bloke. You seem like a good bloke. That bloke over there might be a shit bloke. Well, she's a good chick. That's a good Sheila.
There you go. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's great. That's fabulous. Now, if people wanted to contact you, how can they reach you? And also, how can they get a copy of the book?
Yeah, anyone wants to contact me directly, just email me at brendan@nobullshitwellness.com, or they can order the book or see the book, what it's about, the name of the chapters, and have a bit of a preview at www.nobullshitwellness.com. No bullshit wellness, all one word.
Okay, great. And then what I'll do is I'll go ahead and put your links to the email address and to the website in the show description.
Excellent.
As well. And then so we're going to have this available on YouTube, and then also we'll turn it into a podcast as well. So for people who want to listen to it, they'll be able to hear our conversation there as well.
Excellent. Thank you very much. It's been great talking with you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And hopefully we can have you on again sometime in the future. And are you going to be writing any more books, or is this it for a while?
Oh, it should be it for a while, but I do plan to write another one, a bigger and better one, but I just need the time at the moment. If I get this new job going back into health and wellness, I should be able to start writing another one. So probably expect another one within a couple of years.
All right, sounds good. And then we'll talk to you again at some point in the future, okay?
All right. Cheers, mate.
Take care. Have a good one. Thanks.